Tama Jobot-Sakarvelo. This is Spielplot.com coming to you from our studio high atop Tbilisi's charming Rustaveli Avenue. Today is Thursday, the 20th of December, 2012. Have a merry, merry Christmas. On this date in 1803, the Louisiana Purchase is completed at a ceremony in New Orleans, Louisiana. In 1917, the Cheka Charming Bunch, the first Soviet secret police, is founded. In 1946, the Christmas classic It's a Wonderful Life premieres. In 1951, the first nuclear power plant to generate electricity goes on stream in Idaho. In 1957, Elvis is drafted. In 1963, the Berlin Wall opened for the first time. Opened. I don't know whether that's the right word for the Berlin Wall, but okay, whatever. In 1973, the Spanish Prime Minister, Admiral Luis Canedo Blanco, is assassinated by a car bomb in Madrid. In 1999, Macau is handed over to China by Portugal. Birthday today is Revaz Inaniashvili, the writer, as well as being Yalda, the birth of Mithra, the Persian angel of light and truth. A lot of people think of me as an angel of light and truth, so if you want to call me Mithra, that's totally okay, no problem. You don't have to, but, you know, okay, whatever. Anyway, we are Cameron Christensen, Matthias Hooter, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be associated with any of our employers, past, present, or future, for those of us who are employed.
Or will ever be in the future.
Or will ever be in the employed in the future. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Politra column this week is about labor unions and how labor rights are good, but there are some dangers in terms of job protection that unions often work for. And also, we should think a little bit about equality. Generally, union membership parallels income equality, which has been a problem certainly in the United States.
Making Georgia a right-to-work state?
No, you busting on me for being from Texas there? Listen, you know, Pinko. I did not use the term right to work, which I reject outright, by the way.
Which means ban on unionizing.
Ban on unionizing, yes. Although, if you have to join a union to work somewhere, that's another matter.
I also don't agree with that.
Right, so, you know, I don't know. It's a little complicated, socialist man. Okay, thanks to all Spielpod listeners who have posted on the forum or emailed us their comments and suggestions. Keep it coming. Special shout out to Andrea Dixon, dedicated a listener. She gets a free lifetime subscription to Spielpod.com. If you haven't commented, keep the input coming. We've enjoyed it. What do you want more or less of? At the forum on Spielpod.com or email us at Spielpod@gmail.com. By the way, there's some interesting conversations on the forum that you might want to take a look at about the train to Abkhazia. A post from William. Many of you will remember Will Dunbar, our former colleague, currently on exile on a small, unimportant island in the North Atlantic somewhere, as well as discussions about the Muslim Nigziani issue and some interesting polling there. So, arrests. More arrests. Yesterday, the Director General of Rustaveli and former Minister of Justice and Education, at separate times, Nika Gvaramia, and the former Energy and Finance Minister, Alexander Ketaguri, were arrested for alleged corruption, along with the Director of Telasi, Devi Kandelaki, and L&F Service founder, Georgi Nemtsitsveridze, former Deputy Economy and former Deputy Economy Economy Minister Kakhadamenia. The investigation unit at the Ministry of Finance claims that during the summer, the then Energy Minister Ketaguri entered into a corrupt deal with the electricity distributor Telasi, through which three of its daughter companies were able to evade paying taxes, quote, of tens of millions of lari. Kandelaki, quote, offered Ketaguri $1 million as a bribe in exchange for securing state consent on launching talks over this tax agreement, end quote. Ketaguri accepted this proposal and asked Gvaramia to talk to Kandelaki to figure out a way to receive the $1 million. Gvaramia asked his friend Nemtsitsveridze to register a shell company, L&F Service, which took the money from Telasi and its daughter companies in exchange for supposed consulting work by Gvaramia's friend Damenia, a partner at a business consulting firm. Yesterday, the Ministry of Finance posted five secretly recorded audio tapes of Vano speaking with, that's Vano Merabashvili, with Gvaramia and other people who were arrested. The ministry also posted court warrants classified as secret to indicate that it had court permission to take these conversations. The recordings were first given to TV9. Net Gazzetti reported this afternoon that according to Eka Adashidze, a spokesperson for the Tbilisi City Court, the court has not issued permission to take the conversations involving Vana. Yeah.
And there was also, I think just a few minutes ago, before we started taping, the court again published a statement and said it was illegal for the Ministry of Finance to release all this documentation. And the court warrants or the court documents that are on the Ministry of Finance's investigation service website, they have stamps all over it, do not copy, highly classified and stuff like that.
But I think it's really interesting because when you talk to people, they say they want to know, you know, are these legit? Is it legit? You know, these things need to be explained. You know, we're going to get so criticized. And so,
well, but that's exactly what the former government did. I mean, they would say, okay, we're prosecuting these people because of the things they said, or here's how horrible
disagree with you on that, though, because very frequently what they did was actually not prosecute. They would put out these tapes and recordings and whatever just to discredit people and then not prosecute them.
Right.
But also often they would say, like, the tapes would come out after the prosecution, or sometimes they would say, you know, here's the evidence.
Yeah. But it's like the tapes are very long. These are apparently several hours of conversations, and it's not really clear if they add much to the case. I mean, Vano has not been affiliated with that deal so far. So
clearly, if Vano, if they don't have a warrant for Vano to
and
be in the
that
conversation.
That seems to be the issue.
And that seems to be the case. That was illegal, right? So, I mean, somebody in the Ministry of Finance, whoever posted that, has broken the law, right?
So, but somebody was illegally recording him at the time, also under the UNM ruling.
Perhaps.
Right?
I mean, but, well, it, I,
the,
I, mean,
they I think the recordings are from November, as far as I understand.
That's one case as to whether or not that was illegal. And, okay, they can prosecute that. And if they're going to prosecute people who are, you know, illegally taping conversations, there's a lot of prosecuting to be done there. But they seem to enjoy using those, you know. So, I mean, if they were illegally gotten, then, I mean, shouldn't they destroy all of those? Or, you know, they seem to be making active use of the archives right now. So, I don't know. But, I mean, in terms of double standards, you know, this seems to be a, you know.
I mean, also the shell company issue. I'm not defending, you know, like, these are allegations and I believe that they should be investigated. But one issue is, like, having a shell company, there's a lot of Georgian companies that are owned by shell companies. And there's not that many reasons why you have shell companies in Panama, you know, British Virgin Islands and wherever. It's because either the owners behind these companies want to launder money, they want to hide taxes, or they want to hide the identity of the people who actually own stuff.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And that's been going on for a long time. And it was just an epidemic in the former government. And there has been very little conversation of just solving the problem by just making it illegal. And it's really, really easy to prevent shell companies from being around. You just have to, you know, say that there have to be real names of real human beings.
Or especially from getting government contracts and license agreements and all that stuff.
Right. I mean, it's the concept of the you know, ultimate beneficial owner of something, you know, has to be individuals, and you can see who they are. And it's really, really not difficult to do that. And they should talk about that.
Well, I think the there's kind of a couple issues though here. I mean, one, we're talking about the actual cases. The second is we can talk about the perception of these arrests. And the third is we can talk about the, you know, kind of international PR war that I think is taking place. And they're, you know, kind of very different levels, and, you know, what's being demanded domestically or you know, what's being interpreted domestically versus how things are being portrayed internationally are quite different conversations.
Yeah, but, I mean, Kvaramia, as far as I understand, and maybe I don't have all the information, but as far as I understand, Kvaramia was cooperating with the investigation. They had asked him to come in for questioning, and he has done that, and then they still arrested him. And, you know, he heads the largest private broadcaster. That broadcaster has been closely affiliated with the president's administration and with the previous government. But still, if somebody is accused of a white-collar crime, he's cooperating with the investigation, you can prevent him from leaving the country if you want.
Taking his passport? Will you also take his fake passport?
There are not that many borders. And, I mean, you know, people could walk across the green border to Armenia or to Turkey, but realistically, like, you could prevent somebody from leaving at the airport.
I mean,
if you're
talking about a punishment, I mean, look, if you're, I'm not saying that fleeing is an admission of guilt, but it's pretty close. And if you leave the country and, you know, face indictment if you come back, I mean, that's a pretty strong punishment. And I think, like, I don't know, it seems like the arrests and imprisonment so soon, you know, 2 months after the election. I mean, is it really necessary to be to be doing that? Especially as Mattia says, that if they're cooperating, it's, you know, it's white collar stuff.
I don't know. I mean, I just this makes me think so much of the Okoroshvili case. You know, I mean, there are some differences, but what's similar is that, you know, he was able to get asylum so easily because he was, you know, based upon the idea that he would not get a fair trial domestically.
Or based on the lobbying by the government at the time, then, begging France maybe to give him asylum.
But
yeah, there's that.
Well, but I don't know about that, but maybe that's why I think the PR war is very, you know, interesting. And if you're looking at international publications and the way that they keep just bringing up the arrests, and
yeah.
It's
true. And there's, I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but Charles Fairbanks mentions that and saying that, you know, that the Western pushback against this is causing some sort of anti-Western feelings among certain people in the administration. And I agree. I think
the Georgian public, I think.
Yeah, among the Georgian public, somewhat, that it's saying that, so, okay, the West is showing that it indeed does have a double standard because they were so quiet during the Saakashvili period about these things, which indeed the West was, particularly under the Bush, the Americans under the Bush administration.
Yeah.
So the court also came out and said publication of these records by the finance ministry was illegal, as we said. Lawmakers from UNM condemned Gvarami's arrest as pressure on independent television network and walked out of parliament in protest. Misha demanded his, quote, immediate release, end quote, as well as an end to all this lawlessness. He said, quote, if someone thinks that destruction, the destruction of institutions, the destruction of the army, when you arrest the chief of the general staff in the toilet of the defense ministry, the destruction of the police, when police are apparently being told to bow their heads to criminals, the destruction of the free press, the destruction of buildings is the reason the Georgian people voted for them in the election, they are very mistaken. The people voted for an improvement in their social situation, end quote. Yeah, hey, look, Misha's really ticked off, and he's got a lot to be ticked off about. It's just that, like, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, under the national movement and their historic preservation, you know, efforts or lack thereof in the city of Tbilisi, a lot of buildings were knocked down. I think the UNM is quite limited in how they can, you know, criticize the current government. And certainly, like, whether or not the arrests are politically motivated, and I think they are, and I think that it's unwise to be having all these arrests. I think the investigations and the prosecutions are totally fine, but the arrests are not such a good idea. However, they are being much more fair, and there is now a much more independent judiciary than was the case before, and that these, you know, for instance, bail hearings and things like that, prosecutors and judges are disagreeing.
Yeah, we actually watched the Saakashvili making these remarks yesterday, and I thought it was, I just wish that someone would kind of tell him that if he moves from fact to hyperbole within the same statement, it really undermines, you know, the validity of what he's talking about. Because, you know, they did arrest the general, the chief of the joint, whatever they call him, the chiefs of staff. Apparently, they locked him in the toilet, and he wasn't able to leave until the police came.
At least he could go to the bathroom.
Well, apparently he went to wash his hands and then was locked in there and then was not able to come out. But then to say that the police are being asked to bow to their heads to criminals, I mean, what is that?
Who knows? There's probably some story of, you know, I don't know, some type of ritual humiliation, you know, pushback going on in some prisons. I don't know. TV company Rustavi Ori founder Georgi Karamanishvili released a statement on the TV company website, quote, we, the owners of the channel, perceive the detention of Rustavi Ori, director general, as a direct pressure on an independent media outlet and an attempt to hinder TV operation. I'm outside Georgia now, popular place to be, and at the very first possibility I will be back to Tbilisi. Until my arrival, I'd like to call on the company employees, notwithstanding the current situation, to carry on work to avert the suspension of the TV operations, end quote.
Yeah, and I mean, Georgi Karamanishvili is not really the founder of Rustavi too. He's kind of the trusted front man who is right now owning some of it. And his relative Levan is the other major owner of it. And it's interesting because you were talking about the knocking down of buildings. So Levan is also the guy who owns or is involved in GMC Group, the company that built the Riche complex, the other side of the river where the new theater, whatever it is being built. And the government also investigates that deal over alleged corruption because that land was sold by the city to GMC, then nothing happened, and then GMC sold it back to the city for, I think, $10 million more.
Yeah, it was $7 million and then yeah. $17 million.
Yeah, so many different deals like that.
Gila Udi has been brought in for questioning on that.
We'll talk about that later in the show. But also yesterday, dozens of angry protesters picketed UNM office in Kutaisi, where Misha was meeting with UNM lawmakers. The protesters called for Misha's resignation and shouted insults at him. Some reports indicate that stones were thrown at the president's vehicle when it left. Protesters went after UNM lawmaker Ako Minashvili after he exited the building, insulting and swearing at him, while several protesters tried to beat him up. Parliamentary Chairman Dato Usubashvili has strongly condemned the incident and criticized the police for failing to prevent it. Prime Minister Ivanishvili likewise condemned the incident and called on law enforcement agencies to investigate it and to take measures to prevent such incidents in the future, which is good. Be nice to see if any of those cops are more formally disciplined that were evidently standing around and doing not much.
I thought that he was supposed to have his own special protective force now.
Who? Ako Minashvili?
No, the president.
No, I think the president has it right now, but there's an idea to move it from the president to the government.
Right. So, I mean, I understand that there was local police involved who apparently weren't doing their crowd control, but doesn't he also have his own?
I mean, usually he has, but I don't know.
I don't know whether they're good at preventing rocks from being chucked at the car.
But it's. I think that's really a problem if that continues to happen. I mean, if there's like intimidation and threats and attacks against representatives of the parliament or the president's administration, that's a serious problem. I mean
Usupashvili's statement was really good and really clear, and it was just saying, look, we do this right now and it's all going to come back and bite us, which is absolutely true. I found
Bitsina issued only a press release.
I think this is
something where you want to go on TV and say, this is not cool.
Yeah,
do that.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, that it was, the press release was kind of like, I have to say this now.
It's like with the disputes in the village over the mosque. It's like, we don't want conflict.
Yeah,
it's
we don't want conflict, right? Hey, let's all get along. Rather than, this is, if you're on my side and you're doing this, you're not on my side. And it would be nice to show a little bit more leadership.
But
there.
Why we don't even? I mean, let's go back a little bit further during the pre-election period when people were going to certain villages. Whose bodyguard was arrested for carrying a gun? Was that
Georgian
Green?
Stones were thrown by people.
Yeah, I mean,
by the UNM.
There was a big video about that. But look,
police are ineffective all the time.
Well, no, that's
tongue-in-cheek.
But look, I disagree with this because I think it's really important. I mean, and I think that there are a lot of people that take that attitude, which is like, well, they were being horrible in the pre-election period, and so therefore, okay, fine, they're getting what they deserve.
I'm talking about the police being ineffective at crowd control both then and now. And maybe it's a recurrent theme
police. Effective at crowd control, but if somebody gets fired and it's, they're publicly fired, then crowd control gets better. Now, that didn't happen in the pre-election period because they didn't want the crowds to be controlled because the UNM had hired the crowds in order to be there, in order to cause problems for Otsneba. Okay, it's a different period right now with a different interior ministry, and let's see if they do that. And let's see, there's the interior ministry dealing with the police, then there's dealing with the supporters and somebody explaining to the supporters, let's not be those guys. BI's special envoy for settlement relations with Russia, Zuda Abashidze, met with Russian Foreign Minister Grigory Karasin at the first official meeting between Georgian and Russian representatives since August 2008. On Tuesday, BI said he's hopeful about direct contact between the two countries and said he hopes to meet with President Putin or Prime Minister Medvedev. Is Medvedev really still Prime Minister?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He needs to do something.
Yeah, I guess. PM Medvedev in the future. Putin told reporters today that, quote, "We see positive signals from the new Georgian authorities. We respond the same way," end quote. Which, I have to say, in my 15 years of floating around the region, I've never actually seen that, you know, when you're nice, it doesn't mean that they're nice back. But, you know, probably no reason not to be nice, I guess.
Well, Abashidze said basically, like, we need to have a dialogue. However, they've both kind of, both sides, the Russian and the Georgian, have, you know, they're entrenched in their encampments where they say, you know, we're not going to go, the Russians say we're not going to go back on our recognition. And
right.
The Georgian side is still saying that, you know, we won't have direct engagement with Russia as long as you guys have embassies.
Right. So what will happen is that, you know, after a couple of meetings and much vodka, they'll sign a treaty on cultural cooperation.
And sports.
And sports, yeah, exactly. Actually, because Georgia always wins, you know, like rugby game. I mean, I don't know that the Russians are going to be so interested in, you know, in sports.
Maybe judo.
Judo, yeah. yeah, I don't know. Right. Mixed martial arts. Right. On Tuesday, former Prime Minister Nika Gilaudy testified before the financial police regarding the sale of the Rije Recreational Zone, which is in front of the presidential palace. It was sold in 2006 to an unknown private company for 7 million lari, as we recently heard from Cameron, and never fulfilled its obligations to create a recreational area. 2 years later, Tbilisi City Hall bought the territory back for over 2 times the price they sold it for, according to Cameron Christensen about 6 minutes ago, 17 million lari. Gilaudy was then the Minister of Finance. So, yeah, that's bad. Now, a little bit of history on the Rije. Actually, when Shevardnadze came in, if I remember correctly, as head of the not the KGB guy, but the actual, you know, first secretary of the party.
The head of the Presidium?
Or whatever that thing is. Yeah.
When they abolished the president because...
Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But in the late 70s, he got... late 70s. They got rid of the Rije, which was a, you know, an old, you know, kind of crumbly but cool neighborhood, and then just mowed the whole thing down. And that's where Tbilisi Soba was, which was the sort of communist replacement for Ispanahoba, a multi-ethnic holiday that was sort of like the Georgian Mardi Gras. The celebration of spinach is what Ispanahoba means. The celebration of Tbilisi is what Tbilisi Soba is, and it was basically where people from the villages would come and, you know, whatever. And it still happens. And that happened especially on the Rije. And then gradually, you know, illegally after independence, they built these sort of, I don't know, these kind of big places where you'd have weddings and birthday parties and things like that. And they had a giant parking lot out front where everybody would learn to drive.
And protest later.
Protests? They had protests there?
Yeah, that's always where the protests would go. People would march from Tavisukuleba to Rije. Yeah.
Oh,
2007.
Yeah,
that
right.
Was a
well,
big
that, but
point.
That just because that when because Misha's house was, you know, was up up there, and, you know, the park was not yet done. But yeah, but now it's a park in the summer, very very popular with tourists. On December 17th, the Ministry of Interior claimed to have uncovered, quote, a scheme by the previous government to bankrupt Ivanishvili's Kartu Bank earlier this year. The scheme allegedly involved the creation of fake tax debts for companies that had borrowed money from Kartu. There's a fairly lengthy description of what was done, but, you know, it really was pretty appalling how they did it. I mean, they did it so that, I mean, it was a law that was very carefully constructed to allow the government to bankrupt Kartu and to make it, you know, very to make it impossible for the bank to save its assets, to buy the assets at auction or
right, basically
else.
Any company that had a Kartu loan and that was found to have tax debt to the government could basically liquidate the company, sell it for half the price. There would be a fake bidder who would bid but wouldn't pay anything. Then it would go to the government or to former owners, and basically Kartu lost control over the assets and couldn't regain it back. And then 3 months later, they changed the law back because it was seen as a big problem, but they only used it against Kartu Bank.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was so obvious. And, you know, their attitude was, oh, well, all this money is going to corrupt the system, and so we're going to take away the instrument through which that money can corrupt things, which is Kartu Bank. But that's really not accurate. I mean, there was a lot of cash sloshing around, and I think towards the end of the last few weeks before the election, you know, there were all sorts of reports of, you know, cash through churches and just cash all over the place. Whether or not there was as much cash sloshing around as the rumors say, I don't know. But I think there probably was quite a bit. But I don't think it necessarily went through Kartu Bank. And Kartu Bank by the way, the big run on the bank of Absolute Bank in 1999, I think, that Cartu Bank took over all those debts, and so a big number of depositors were people that had money in Absolute Bank, which was a bank that was set up by when Jim Baker came here in 93 to help Shevardnadze out. He said, we need a Western bank. That was set up. Everything was fine. Somebody started stealing money.
Was it Levan Pirbeli?
I don't know if it was Levan. It may have been, but it was someone of that ilk. And then there was a run. The bank went belly up, and Bidzina very kindly took over all those depositors. And so a bunch of those depositors were just people who had been sort of early people going into the banking system.
If there's somebody in our audience who knows how to read balance sheets of banks, please go to the National Bank of Georgia website, where you have the quarterly disclosure reports of all the commercial banks, and there's the one for Cartu for the third quarter. And I can't read that stuff. So it would be interesting to compare the third quarter report from this year from a year ago to, you know, see how many assets they lost, actually.
Yeah.
Also, because the beneficiary owners of banks are disclosed there. And apparently, Itzina's family has sold Cartu Group, at least officially. On paper, the bank is now owned by one of his sons for 8% are owned by one of his sons, but the other shares are owned by I don't know, like 10 Cypriot guys, like 10 Greek names from Cyprus show up there, which I'm not sure if they're the actual owners, but
yeah,
they're supposed
sure.
to be Cypriot, because they're disclosed as, yeah.
Cyprus is the one that has very high prices for freedom of information requests, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's EU, so it's like you can get all the documents, but there's like sort of 12 different types of documents that could have the information that you want, and each page costs like 40 euros to get.
It's where Muslim, Turkish money launderers and Orthodox money launderers meet and shake hands
shake
in Nicosia and have their shell companies on both sides.
It's kind of like
Eastern friendship and cooperation through money laundering.
Exactly. It's like the Eastern Mediterranean version of Erkinetti Market, you know. Journalist Paul Rimple.
We love Cyprus, by the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. EU member, totally. We'll be there one day. Journalist Paul Rimple, in collaboration with TI Georgia, the hardest working NGO in Georgia, have published a book called Who Owned Georgia 2003 to 2012, written in an accessible format. It uncovers shell companies and discusses how large companies transferred control from one political regime to their allies in the next. It's available on TI's website to download at transparency.ge, or you can stop by TI's office at 26 Roosevelt Avenue. On the 13th of December 2012, Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs of Breakaway Abkhazia, Mr. Kintba, met with Breakaway Abkhaz President Ankvab. Do we have to say breakaway all the time? I mean, I guess
we can say
to
de facto.
De facto? Can we just not? Can we just say
DF.
Abkhaz President? Can
say DF.
DF? That seems a little flippant, but okay. Anyway, Mr. Kintba informed the president that he had the impression that international organizations do not fully understand why the Abkhaz leadership has decided that they should only be able to work in Gali. Ankvab said, because we are not satisfied with the content and quality of their work, they should not get into our education, culture, or our minds. Has the UN actually ever gotten into anyone's mind?
On somebody's.
Except it's employees. We have our own rules, traditions, and standards by which we develop. We have to rebuild what they have constructed. If they have spent on their projects 1 ruble, the billboards cost 10. By the end of 2013, most of them have to leave Abkhazia, end quote. Which is quite interesting. I mean, I will say that, like, if they've spent 1 ruble on their project, the billboards cost 10 is a biting but in some ways accurate assessment.
The question is, who owns the billboards?
No, I'm sorry. The billboards there are really crappy, and they're all of former or current presidents.
Yeah, but in Russian cell phone companies.
Yes.
But in general, the criticism of donors that, you know, like slathering their stuff all over the place.
But is it basically because there's so much Russian money that they don't care about some Western money?
Yes, it is. And, like, I mean, they really, like, Westernization is a real, and it's not Westernization, like, you know, I don't know this whole, like, you know, Westernization thing, but I don't know, they're getting in their minds. I mean, in some ways, you know, like the... If you're cool in Abkhazia, you know, if you speak a little bit of English and you're sort of interested in the rest of the world, you know, you end up gravitating towards NGOs because that's the only thing that's sort of going on there. You know, I guess if you want to isolate Abkhazia, that's a fairly smart thing to do, unfortunately.
Actually, I mean, the NGO sector up there is incredibly politicized. I would say, in fact, they're even more for Abkhaz independence than the average person.
Independence means, it depends on what you mean by independence. You know, I mean, you could say that the Georgian Orthodox Church is very much in favor of Georgian independence, but, you know, they mean, at least in part, independence from the West. Whereas for many other people, independence means being able to join the West. And clearly, Anfab, you know, has a different definition of independence from, you know, some that would feel like independence means independence from Georgia.
Yeah, it's not the they're not joining the West because they don't feel respected by the West. I mean, they've gotten visits by a number of EU ambassadors where they don't understand why they're coming from Tbilisi. I mean, when you have international organizations, they frequently will only meet with an international organization head if they have someone who's coming not from Tbilisi.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they're pretty hardcore. I think it's not a good step for them because in the end I think it's most likely to just lead to greater dependence on Russia. But
that's why the railway would be so great.
Yeah, indeed. According to decree Misha issued on Tuesday, non-commercial legal entity will be created and given 1 million lari from the president's reserve fund in order to carry out civil sector and free media development. The organization that receives money will be selected by a commission chaired by the former deputy minister of foreign affairs, Nino Kalandadze. According to the executive director of the Charter of Journalistic Ethics of Georgia, Tamar Kordzaya, the president's initiative entails the allocation of grants, and thus this is prohibited by Georgian law.
I just think that this is an absolutely crazy idea. I'm not sure exactly what the president's reserve fund is supposed to be allocated towards, but I certainly, as I previously understood it, it was not for something like this. Secondly, as
Kordzaya...
No, it was Kordzaya,
for New Year's parties.
It was for whatever he wanted to be.
It was supposed to be for, you know, force majeure and, you know, state emergencies and things like that.
It's never been for that. It's been for whatever he wants to spend it on, you know? I mean...
No, I understand that it's been misused the entire time, but what I'm saying is that this is a really incredibly blatant misuse of this. But I think what's also quite interesting is that you've had some pushback from people who might have otherwise said that they would have enjoyed receiving funds, Tabula's new TV station, right?
Which is not operational yet. I think the TV3 and its...
Right, but yeah. What's her name?
Chergulishvili. Right. Chergulishvili.
So she said that she, believes that because she's Giga Wokedia's wife, that she shouldn't get money. But in addition, that media should be working off of as a business and should be making revenue.
Right, right. And she's libertarian, so she's consequent in that apparently. But there's also
she does believe in support from other rich libertarians, though. You know, like for example, Lado Gurganidze or Kacha Bendukidze, right. Which is fine because they made their money themselves. Alone with nobody else.
And then decided themselves to give it.
Right, exactly. Because they're what's his name? Galt, and okay, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. But there's also a number of former government officials, who worked for the prime minister's office and, deputy ministers from different ministries. And they are all looking for new jobs, and a number of new think tanks are in creation and are founded right now. And these think tanks are. Apparently several of them will focus on policy recommendations and so on. So it's somewhat likely that some of the funds will go to support some of these entities that are now popping up.
I would, for any foreign journalists, any foreign diplomats that may or may not be listening, I would say, definitely cooperate with those NGOs that are former government officials that they're setting up. But, keep in mind that a lot of these officials that are now setting up NGOs, when real NGOs were trying to get them to show up to events or trying to get them to listen to policy recommendations, would often ignore them. And so,
not all of them, though. Like Vato Lejava, for example. He's a very smart guy. He's been very open and
absolutely. I don't mean all of them, but I mean there's some organizations that are showing up pretty quick and getting extremely... high diplomatic access very, very quickly, which is kind of, you know, just, I don't know.
There's also a bunch of Gongos floating around. They don't have a bunch of new Gongos. They don't really have any profile. But, for example, earlier this week, the government brought in some 20 reporters from Moscow, foreign correspondents based there for 2 days of interviews with the new government, including with Bidzina. And that trip was organized not by the government, not by a lobbying firm, but by an quote-unquote NGO.
What was the name?
I don't know the exact name. I know
harsh,
the people
air
who are
quotes NGO.
Yeah, but it was apparently people who are in the in parliament, close to the Georgian Dream, who have some money and who are doing some of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people that are on this commission are Van Bybord and Karayev, Vera Kobalia, former minister of economy, and Nato Cancelli.
But as far as I understand, they're doing a bidding process now for an organization to administer, or these people are going to be administering the funds.
I think they're going to be the grand commission.
So they're the decision makers.
Yeah,
okay, they're not looking.
Party.
Okay.
Okay. A week ago, Misha pardoned 255 prisoners. 238 were released immediately, while the remaining 17 had their sentences halved. In related news, on Monday, 34 convicts left prison based on the parole commission's decision, which coincided with Barabaraoba. Nana Kakabadze, head of the NGO, former political prisoners for human rights, who allegedly received millions from Bidzina, by the way, declared that the West, I'm saying that with air quotes, prevents prisoners arrested under Misha from being recognized as political prisoners. Kakabadze says that Georgian Young Lawyers and NGO Article 42 of the Constitution are managed by the West. She claims that both NGOs left the group studying cases of political prisoners and refugees because they are waiting for further directions from the West. Okay, look, because we're on the show, full disclosure, I'm actually the head of the West.
I knew it.
I know. So it's like a lot of people have suspected it, you know. And so when people say the West, they mean me, Mark Mullen, you know, that I call people up and tell them what the West wants. So I just, you know, I just want to be clear on that, just so you know. Just so, I mean, I am from Dallas.
Well,
know, so.
We reported this on this before, though, but I thought it was actually Kakabadze who was the one who was making phone calls during these, like,
yeah, exactly.
Decisions.
What happened was, and it's just that she's just made even more aggressive comments, which is just really, really appalling. I mean, she is of truly questionable a character, I think, in the role that she's played in practically everything for the last 20 odd years. And in this case, what happened was there was a meeting with Article 42 and Young Lawyers, which is two serious organizations, and they had a list of people. I mean, really, a very seriously, you know, a list
researched,
that
yeah.
researched, but also
they've
according to
the
definition
cases,
of
yeah.
political prisoners, which is a clearly defined legal term. And, you know, and what Kakabadze showed up with was, you know, a list of names. And, you know, there are some rumors, whether or not they're credible, I don't know, that, you know, there had been some money that had gone from families to get, you know, people on the list. And she said, okay, here's my political prisoners, you know, let them out. And they said, we'd like to have a discussion about who these people are. And she had, and so Kakabadze then went around calling those families and saying, you know, these puppets of the West don't want your son released, which is not a very pleasant thing to do. And so she said, you know, and so the head of Young Lawyers in Article 42 said, we're out of here, you know.
Yeah, maybe one thing to add here is that the Georgian Young Lawyers saw a change in their board this week and have a new executive director, because GAILA is basically the only membership-based organization in Georgia. And they, Tamar Cegulishvili, who has been... Tamar Cugushvili, I'm sorry.
Yes,
that's why I was having a problem before.
Yeah, Tamar Cugushvili, who has been heading GAILA for the past 2 years, has been replaced this week.
Yeah, it was really that's a big you know, that'll be important to watch. I mean, first of all, the Tiniko Chidashelli was elected on the board there, which will certainly position them closer to the government. At the same time, the new director seems to be fairly close to her and other people in the Republicans,
but also seems to be a smart guy and respected. Yeah, there's nothing bad about him to say.
Yeah, I mean, no allegations of any sort of corruption or anything like that. But you know, traditionally the Young Lawyers has been, you know, pretty pretty serious in their criticism of the government. And now is a time in which it would be very nice to have an active organization commenting on
the legal aspects,
judicial aspects, and what's happening. Luckily, Tina Cochita Shelley and Sulukiani don't necessarily get along so well. So who knows? Maybe they'll be very objective. But you know, that's something that could affect their funding a lot too, because for ages they've been one of the best funded and strongest NGOs forever. And you know, I don't know what that'll mean in terms of their relationships with donors.
Fun fact: they own their building. I think they're one of the first NGOs to own their building.
Yeah, the Dutch gave it to them, which is a very, very cool project by the Dutch to give like strong organizations to give them that, which is a great thing. ITV reported on December 13th that unofficial reason that Tengiz Gunava, former head of the General Inspection under the Ministry of Internal Affairs, was detained was because of a Georgian police special operation in Zugdidi 2008. During the operation, four Russian soldiers from the peacekeeping force were arrested for allegedly transporting ammunition and anti-tank guided missiles without cooperation with the local law enforcement agencies. End quote. Gunava took an active part in the operation, and since then Russia has been planning their revenge. So how they meant he was arrested by the current authorities was left unexplained, but he was picked up on a heroin possession for years a favorite way to trump up charges. However, unlike in the past, the authorities have sort of somewhat kind of semi-privately admitted that the original arrest was illegal. So the question now is, will anybody be punished for planting the heroin?
It's an amazing story that ITV produced there. I'm not sure who controls ITV yet. ITV used to be a pet project of Caucasus Online, and Caucasus Online was taken over by people close to the government, Levan Karamanishvili, which we have mentioned. And then it became basically Vano's kind of, you know, one of the Vano-leaning outlets. I don't know what it is doing now, but Caucasus Online is still controlled by the same shell companies as before.
Former Defense Minister Irakli Okroshvili has been on hunger strike since Tuesday to express solidarity with the people accused alongside of him of forming illegal military gangs. They have been on hunger strike for more than a week. Okroshvili demands that they be granted the status of political refugees. On the same day, Justice Minister Teya Tsiloukiani declared that Okroshvili was a political refugee returning to Georgia to prove his innocence. She said he will be given that opportunity, but added that the prisoners should stop their hunger strike.
I just wanted to point out that he joined the hunger strike the day before he knew that the list would come out.
So
he was like, I can fast.
So it's
for
more
a
like
day.
Yeah. So it's more like a diet, you know. On Monday, that's good.
Skipping a meal.
It's like the Koba Davitashvili fast when he joined the hunger strike, and you know, they're like all the pictures of the Snickers bars in his desk. On Monday, Tsiloukiani declared on Maestro TV that her main reason for returning to Georgia was to defeat the UNM. Tsiloukiani said that her post as justice minister is a temporary one, and that she currently needs to carry out several reforms in the ministry. During the program, journalist Nino Zuriashvili repeatedly asked Tsiloukiani a question about whether the Justice Ministry would develop its criminal forensic technologies, but Tsiloukiani didn't answer the question, causing a little tension. Yeah, Zuriashvili is not someone you want to be having any tension with.
But the U.S. actually funded a lot of criminal forensic stuff here.
I don't know. I think it's just all those TV shows that everybody watches.
They funded actually a laboratory and I think some training. It was, I think, the Army Corps of Engineers.
But it's like bio warfare viruses.
Yeah, no, that's the,
no, that,
that's
yeah,
the
that's
big,
right. That's where we.
That's the big fancy.
That's where Mark,
thing.
As the West, creates.
Right, where I created the right. You know, King of the West.
Anthrax.
Nationalinterest.org published an article by Regis Gente entitled "Justice and Revenge in Georgia," in which he asserts that the recent spate of arrests is both justice and revenge. After criticizing the West turning a blind eye to Misha's anti-democratic tendency, he ultimately concludes that the new government shouldn't follow the Ukrainian Yanukovych approach, but rather strengthen Georgian political institutions and support the existence of a real opposition. The Atlantic published an article by Charles Fairbanks, as I mentioned about 38 minutes ago, entitled, Is Georgia's New Leader as Undemocratic as Its Last One? And Fairbanks argues that the West has used a double standard, not me, but others in the West, a breakaway faction of the West. The other West has used a double standard to judge the new democratically elected Georgian Dream more harshly than the previous administration, who has a long record of severe human rights violations. Fairbanks warns that from Tbilisi, the Western government's outcry makes it seem like they're siding with the UNM. This is a bad idea because it could empower anachronistic anti-Western elements in Georgia.
Yeah, it's a good article, I think.
It is, and I really agree with him. I mean, I think that you know, they should think carefully about that. Now, the problem is it's mostly newspapers rather than policymakers that are making these arguments, and nobody really necessarily has any control over them.
But. Well, and the U.S. ambassador made a statement today, too, about the Guadamia arrest, saying that, you know, when you have people who are the heads of private companies arrested, then there's going to be questions raised.
Right.
Which we have done.
Which we just raised. So yes.
Box is ticked.
According to an NDI survey, 80% of respondents like Bidzina Ivanishvili, while 29% like Misha Saakashvili. In August, 61% approved of him.
Of Misha,
yes.
Probably, yeah.
Allegedly. 92% of respondents expressed a positive attitude towards the patriarch.
Which is, I think, more than there are Georgian Orthodox in Georgia.
Yeah.
That's kind of close, actually.
I mean, it was like, there's three Georgian Orthodox people then that don't sign off to that.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up a point, though, about the surveys, because I think if you go online, I've been doing a lot of survey work recently, if anybody pays attention to where I am online.
The government
one
does.
One thing that was quite interesting was before the elections, and let's say even 2 years ago, people were worried about Ilya II's influence on politics and, you know, to the church's potential influence on attitudes towards different political leaders. In the recent NDI survey, I believe, they asked who people had discussed their vote with or politics with in general during the pre-election period. And with a priest was zero, pretty much.
Yeah, well, priests don't discuss those sorts of things. They just say, it's sort of like the Catholics, you know, they just say, look, you know.
You don't have a say.
Yeah, here's how it works. You know, God has asked me to let you know. Here's what needs to happen on Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe if they didn't think it was a two-way street in terms of a conversation. The question wasn't, did you listen to a monologue from your priest related to politics?
I will say, if you go to the CRRC website, if you just Google, like, CRRC Tbilisi or something, you'll find the website. And it is an unusually good survey with really, really interesting stuff in there. And they have this incredibly cool crosstab section.
crc.ge/ODA.
Online data analysis.
Exactly. Yes. And so you can get the crosstabs where you can say, like, you know, you want to know two different variables, who said what. So, for example, an incredibly cool initiative that I'm involved with called Radarami, Radarami, just, you know, you can figure it out. It publishes, translates books into, cool books into Georgian, found out that for people who read books, they are more than twice as likely as people who don't read books to go to public meetings. Mm. And so there's all sorts of incredibly cool things you can find out that way. And it's really interesting to play around with it. I will also say that the survey was done with face-to-face. So how this influenced some of the questions about, you know, some things, you know, we'll have to see.
Well, it certainly improves response rate. That's all I can say.
Absolutely. On Monday, BI attended a conference on gender equality where he said that when he entered politics in late 2011, it took him several days to understand the concept of gender and that the issue was still a foreign fruit for Georgian society.
I think he also had, like, it took him several days to pronounce and remember the word. I think that was actually what he said.
Wait, I like kind of the biblical Garden of Eden reference here with foreign fruit. You didn't pick that up.
Okay.
He announced that he would appoint someone as point person in the government chancery to deal with issues pertaining to this topic. Perhaps Cemi Eka, I don't know. You know, like, we'll have to see. Any idea who that's going to be? Do we know?
No.
I don't think they've been nominated yet.
No nominee.
With women.
Yeah.
Who has to deal with women and men.
Yeah, because women are actually the only ones with gender, as we know. Men don't have gender.
Yeah.
Interior Minister Irakli Kharibashvili declared that the number of policemen and police vehicles has increased, and police officers will patrol not only in the center but on all streets in the city. By the way, I saw 2-3 days ago beat cops walking up and down Rustaveli, which I have never, ever seen before. Just two cops walking up and down. And it was raining. So that's nice. I think that's a real step forward. If for no other reason that maybe they will get people to, you know, make drivers pay attention to the crosswalk regulations. On Tuesday, businessman Levan Tumanishvili, uncle of former Prime Minister Vano Medavashvili, was released on 50,000 lari bail. Tumanishvili was arrested on charges of illegally cutting down trees, but was ultimately charged only for document forgery.
I think he was also, there was tax evasion, tax fraud allegations as well.
When was he arrested?
A week ago.
Ah, okay.
Archil Gegeshidze will be ambassador to Washington. He was a senior fellow at Georgian Foundation for Strategic and International Studies, GFSIS, or as it's known, Rondelli's Institute. Under Shevardnadze, he worked as head of the Foreign Policy Analytical Department, the office of the president. He's a great guy, and that's a really, really good appointment. According to Khashoggi TV company Dia, Valeri Gelashvili, who is majoritarian MP candidate for Georgian Dream, owns a brothel in Khashoggi. Gelashvili denied this and said that the place is rented to another company which has an ordinary hotel for Turkish truck drivers. Mm-hmm. Locals say it is well known that he owns a brothel. The Channel One Board of Trustees approved General Director Gheorghe Chanturia's resignation. Chanturia said that the reason for his resignation was because of his failure to implement all planned goals, like the UNM win in the election. Just kidding. The deadline for application, not true. I made that up. Don't hold me to it. All of employers, past and present and future. The deadline for applications for a new director was this evening.
And that's a very, right now, in terms of in media and civil society cycles, that's a very big issue at the moment. Because so there's the director needs to be appointed by the board. The board also has a vacancy right now, but the board is mostly people who are close to Misha, to the UNM. And so the new government... And some people in civil society kind of want to introduce a new law on broadcasting or want to introduce changes to the law on broadcasting that would allow the government or the parliament to fire the whole board and then put in new people in the board, and the new board would then elect a new general director. Now, my personal opinion is that that's not that creates a very high risk. I would call it the Hungarian-style management of the public broadcaster, that the new government...
Misha's good friend Orban.
Yes, that the new government would put in mostly people that are loyal to them, and that would probably install a general director that is also kind of open to recommendations and instructions from the government. So this is a really, really important process to watch how the parliament will deal with the public broadcaster. That, I think, is really, if you want to look at how serious they are in terms of reforming the media and allowing the media to, you know, to operate without political control, the public broadcaster is the thing to watch right now.
And also the government giving grants to media organizations in order to support media freedom. That would be another thing to watch.
Exactly, yeah. Because yes. They certainly got a lot of money to give grants out.
Yeah.
Following up on last week's story about the parliamentary discussion regarding condoms, on Tuesday the parliament approved a law banning the sale of products of a sexual nature to minors and in the vicinity of schools. UNN MPs complained that the law is vague and demanded a specific list of products to be banned. Goga Khachidze said anything, quote, starting with garden vegetables and ending with complex automated devices, end quote, could be construed as products of a sexual nature.
Yeah.
Always one to pipe up with the most excellent argument. Thank you, Goga.
Yeah. Hero Square.
Yeah. yeah, this is just really, really problematic. Does anybody know where this came from? Why did they do this again?
I don't know.
Okay, did any of
listen to our last week's podcast, because Mark explains what exactly is now banned.
I can't do it again. I'm sorry.
No, that was really, it's okay. That was really I spot a loophole. If it really says sale, somebody could set up a nonprofit or, you know, a marketing thing that hands out stuff for free.
Hands them out, yeah.
Just hands them out,
yeah,
free samples.
Because we certainly wouldn't want minors using using condoms. I mean, that would just be, you know, that would be the end of the world. I just, look, if anybody knows, like, especially somebody with connections to Parliament or any of the people.
Or the church.
I don't know. Where did this come from and why are they doing this now? I mean, of all the different things that need to be dealt with, why would they take up bandwidth with this? I mean, it was somebody must have been proving something to somebody, and I don't know, maybe the church.
This is a pre-election bet.
Oh my God, I bet you're right. I bet that's it, a pre-election bet. I bet within, like, you know, a month of the parliamentary term starting, I can.
We're gonna ban strawberry flavored condoms.
Oh, that's so sad. Okay, so speaking of sex, here are some interesting statistics from the CRRC poll. In response to the question, how justified is it for a woman to have a sexual relationship before marriage? 64% of respondents said never, 22% said sometimes, 6% said always. Which, always justified, or is it like always meaning it's obligatory? You know, like you're going to be punished if you don't. Well, 7% didn't know or refused to answer. To the question, how justified is it for a man to have sex before marriage? 33% said never justified, 32% said somewhat, 25% said always justified, and 10% didn't know or refused to answer. All right, may I say, running the crosstabs on what women say about these questions and what men say about these questions is just fascinating. As for homosexuality, 90%, not 19, but 90% of respondents said it is never justified. 3% said sometimes justified, 1% said always justified, while 6% didn't know or refused to answer.
What is the assumed percentage of homosexual population, like
average
10% is the number that's tossed around.
I did run the cross tabs for both gender, and then I ran separately for area of residence, so urban, rural versus and capital. And women were more conservative, which I found interesting. So women were the ones saying, you know, that women should not have sexual relationships before marriage. But there was a very big difference between the capital versus rural when it comes to attitudes towards premarital sex.
Yeah, I really worry about this issue about homosexuality. Like, what, you know, so I don't know the path through which Georgia can get over its issues there.
TV shows.
Is the way to do it. Yeah, the you know, national movement dominated public broadcaster and others have had an excellent track record of that over the last several years. And let's hope that they.
Well, the problem is if you buy the really cheap soaps from the Latin American countries that are sometimes, some of them quite conservative and Catholic. So,
and very popular.
Yes, but they don't deal with homosexuality that much.
The Georgian-produced shows, tend to be much better about that.
But there was like one reality show a couple of years, like, you know, kind of a Big Brother kind of thing. And I think there was one that they immediately tried to do the thing that all the Western broadcasters had done. You have on the show, you have a gay guy that comes out.
Right.
And
they kicked him off.
They kicked him off after a public outcry. And I think even the producer or director in charge of that show was fired. And then there was another show that was, you know, a show about do you dare to say something? And if you say something really private, then you win money. And you're attached to a lie detector. And it was also a couple of years ago. And there was a professor from, I think, Kutaisi, who was asked if he's gay. And he said, yeah. And he was like, you know, like he won money, I guess. But he was also fired and faced a lot of problems and pressure. So whenever there's somebody who tries to kind of, you know, make it part of mainstream, there's immediately the backlash. And unfortunately, nobody's there to defend these people or to step up.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. We look forward to hearing ideas from our audience on how we can, you know, like make this become the, you know, normal in that regard. This week, plenary session was held every week in every day in Parliament. The most important things that happened included adoption of a draft law on amnesty and the draft law on exemption from administrative fees. Because of the upcoming Christmas holiday, extra Georgian Railway trains will be running from December 25th through the holiday period from Tbilisi to Batumi and to Zugdidi. Georgian Airways will start flights to Kiev on December 25th. The flights will go four times a week, and tickets will start from 265 lari for a round trip. That's a pretty good price, and there's a lot of international connections there. So I would look at Kiev as a good hookup to Western Europe and the U.S. This week's geocapital number is 91.6%, which is the percentage of Georgians that trust their family completely. 8.1% somewhat trust their family, and 0.3% don't trust their family very much. These numbers vary around the world quite a bit. Some of the most trusting countries are Russia, 92%, Sweden, 94%, Turkey, 96%, Egypt, 96%, and Jordan, 97%. People who trust their family the least can be found in Zambia, where only 66% of the people trust their family completely, Brazil, 67%, and at the bottom of the table is the Netherlands, with a mere 63%. Point of clarification. Last week we discussed MPs and business interests. We were having a hard time remembering the name of a certain MP after a bit of research. Our own Cameron Christensen discovered that Koba Bekaudi resigned his parliamentary position in 2006 following criticism about his being the owner and operator of a customs terminal outside of Tbilisi. Interestingly, Bekaudi is the same member of parliament who charged that Shalva Ramashvili, formerly of Channel 202, attempted to extort $100,000 from him in order not to air an investigation into his business interests, for which Ramashvili was jailed in 2005. In November this year, he recanted, saying that Adeshvili made him do it. In 2006, Parliament stripped UNM MP Badri Nanetashvili of his credentials after accusing him of managing the local TV station Trialeti in Chittagong region and interfering in the television station's editorial policy. Thank you, Cameron.
No problem.
This from a faithful Tbilpod listener in Czechistan. And I quote.
Where's that again?
Prague.
Okay.
To Czechia, you know, the Czech Republic seems a little polysyllabic, right. But, you know, you get the idea. Quote, I wanted to comment on what you said in the last iteration about Georgia and the CIS. First, I don't believe the CIS was created as a counterweight to NATO, but rather as an attempt to hold on to some of the economic and political advantages of the Soviet Union after the whole thing fell apart, not to mention cementing Russia's primacy in the near abroad. Georgia's withdrawal from the CIS after the Russian invasion was complete in 2009, but the Georgian Foreign Ministry insisted that collateral treaties, such as those granting visa-free travel and free trade status, were still valid and not dependent on membership in the CIS. I haven't heard whether other CIS members agreed and are still granting duty-free privileges to Georgian products as a practical matter, but I'm sure the Russian position would have been forget about it. Some of your other listeners might have an answer to that, but Georgia would certainly want to back into the CIS to ensure that the question would be moot. Very, very interesting. Thank you very much for that. This week, the Kolga movies are Tomorrow, Blue Mountains, or An Unbelievable Story in 1997. Wait, it's not. That's not the subtitle of Blue Mountains. We're talking about the same one, right?
Which one is
it? Sisori Tebi. Anyway, go see that. It's a fabulous movie, and everyone who has any connection with Georgia should see that movie. That's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock at Domkino, across from Rustaveli Metro and McDonald's. On Monday, It's a Wonderful Life, greatest Christmas movie ever made, with steaming smokestress Donna Reed. On Wednesday, Shine from 1996. I don't know what that is. All movies begin at 8 o'clock.
That's about a pianist.
Oh, yeah. I remember something about that. Yeah. The 25-meter-tall New Year tree on Rustaveli outside the former Parliament building will be lit on December 25th at 6 p.m. Santa Claus, as well as Tovlis Babu, will entertain children and give them presents from December 25th until December 14th at Tatsminda Park. On December 25th at 4 p.m., the New Year's Festival will open on Meydani Square with Tbilisi's Big Band, which is a great band, by the way. I would encourage everyone to go to that. Starting then, concerts of orchestras and ensembles will be held daily at 4 o'clock on Movie Square near Meydani. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is @txtbuk, tango, x-ray, tango, bravo, uniform, kilo. Our email is tbilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website at www.tbilpod.com. Have a merry, merry Christmas. Mm-hmm. This week, we'll finish with The Flatlanders and Dallas from 1972.
Did you ever see Dallas from a DC 9 at night? Well, Dallas is a jewel. Oh, yeah, Dallas is a beautiful sight. And Dallas is a jungle, but Dallas gives a beautiful light. Did you ever see Dallas? Well, Dallas is a woman who will walk on you when you're down. But when you are up, she's the man you want to take around. But Dallas ain't a woman to help you get your feet on the ground. And Dallas is a woman who will walk on you. A rich man.